This doesn't mean that wealth managers are going to phase out in-person meetings and look more like a robo-advisor, but rather they're going to increasingly adopt a hybrid model, which means they're going to blend both human interactions and digital self-service.
Hey gang, it's Monday, April 25th. Michael and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by mParticle. I'm Marcus, and from my voice, you can probably tell it's the morning again. I don't know why we keep doing this. I don't know why we keep doing the morning recordings. Enough already. Enough. Today, I'm joined by Michael Tattersall, who is one of our research analysts covering financial services. Michael, welcome.
Hi, Marcus. How you doing?
Hello there. I'm worse than you are because you are in the future and it's the afternoon and you don't sound like this. But we'll get there. How are you? Sorry, I didn't even ask.
Just assumed you're better. I'm doing well. It's 4:20 here in London, so yeah, closing
you're
the day.
In great shape. Mm-hmm. Yep, I knew it. Damn it, Michael. Today's fact: why does Mickey Mouse wear white gloves? I'd never questioned it before, and I feel like I should have, because it's weird. He's just wearing white gloves. Why wouldn't he? So many reasons. Anyway, Walt Disney might have been the first to put gloves on his characters, as seen in the 1929 The Opry House, starring Mickey Mouse and then everything in the future that Mickey was involved in. In addition to being easier to animate, there's another reason for the gloves, and Walt said we didn't want him to have mouse hands because he was supposed to be more human, Disney told his biographer in 1957. That's why he wears gloves.
Well, that is interesting. I'll be honest, I'd never considered that.
I know. And they've all got them. Goofy's got them, Minnie, Donald, even Daisy. I don't know where, I don't know how to feel about it. They look like they're refereeing a snooker match.
Yeah, you're right there.
That's for the English listeners. Americans, you won't get that because you don't play snooker, okay? It's like pool, bigger table, but much more difficult. Anyway, today's real topic, the future of investing. All right, Michael, we're talking all about the future of investing today. And there's a lot to cover because there's a lot going on here, apparently, with the future of investing. And we start with Robinhood, which is probably a familiar kind of household name. At this point, not because of the Disney animation, not because of the classic Kevin Costner, Morgan Freeman Robinhood, but because of the investment app. And Michael, you know that they're diversifying into retirement accounts, which is not something that they recently became famous for. And the Robinhood will soon offer support for both traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs as well. Why is this news significant for Robinhood?
It's significant for Robinhood as it's emblematic of recent developments in the wider digital brokerage space. Robinhood has established itself as one of the leading US digital brokerages over the past few years in terms of the high user numbers it now commands. And it's been a real pioneer in democratizing retail investing, but it's now having to branch out into additional financial services in order to keep growing, which really shows what's going on in the space.
So IRAs, individual retirement accounts, and digital brokerage, let's explain that for the folks. What are they?
Yeah, so simply put, a digital brokerage is a company that enables retail investors to trade securities and other assets through investment accounts online. And there's a range of players that do that. You have household names like Charles Schwab and also some of the newer challengers like Robinhood.
Okay, got it. And you know that Robinhood, over 21 million active users in Q2 2021, and that's up over 100%, a number worth taking note of, from Q2 2020. So in that 1 year, Q2 2020 to Q2 2021, they grew over 100% and they're now on over 21 million active users. How and why?
The early pandemic period created perfect conditions for a retail investing boom, in that consumers were stuck at home bored with time on their hands and their savings were topped up by stimulus checks and they weren't able to actually go out and spend that money on leisure activities as hospitality venues were of course shut. Mm-hmm. And these factors led to a flood of new investors in the stock market. And according to Charles Schwab data, in early 2021, roughly 15% of all US retail investors traded for the first time in 2020, which really illustrates this growth.
So why retirement accounts? Why are they moving into retirement accounts?
Yeah, it's a good question. With the end of lockdowns and the end of fiscal government support alongside other adverse economic conditions such as soaring inflation, consumers just have less spare cash to trade. And in fact, Robinhood CEO Vlad Tenev actually flagged this towards the end of last year. He mentioned that he expected that retail trading volumes would dip after this big growth in retail investing volumes over the past year or so, and mentioned that they were going to have to launch new products and services such as retirement accounts to mitigate this. In fact, their Q1 results are out in a few weeks and they don't look promising. Robinhood itself is anticipating that Q1 revenue is going to be less than 340 million, which is actually a drop of 35% compared to the previous year, Q1 2021.
Wow.
So digital brokerages like Robinhood just need to explore new growth strategies.
So let's zoom out for a second. What does this news tell us about how the retail investing and digital brokerage space is changing?
Simply, digital brokerages won't be able to rely on these huge ranks of new retail investors, and they will need to explore new ways to lure in new customers. Our own forecast estimates that new user growth will plummet by 6.2 percentage points in 2022 this year, down to just 1.7%, showing they're going to be competing for a much smaller group of new users. And as a result of that, we expect they're going to increasingly move into new areas such as offering additional financial services, retirement accounts being one example, and banking services being another option, like debit cards. We also expect that cryptocurrencies represent a further growth opportunity for digital brokerages.
Why? Why crypto?
It's interesting because cryptocurrencies seem to be increasingly capturing the attention of casual traders. And these casual traders in 2020 and at the start of 2021, they were the ones piling into the stock market. So if they can find new ways to attract and retain these casual traders, that's going to boost their user numbers. Equally, I think as Robinhood showed last year when it added Dogecoin and its price spiked, adding the right coin at the right time can boost user numbers.
So this confuses me because I would have thought that someone on the outside looking in on the financial world or as a casual trader, as you mentioned, to them, crypto, especially at the start of investing for someone, crypto would have seemed too volatile and that you might have wanted to start with something a little bit lower risk.
So yeah, I think the reason is casual traders piled into the stock market last year because there was this extreme volatility, and that's what you get with cryptos. The prices are constantly going up and down. So there is that opportunity for short-term gains. So for a similar reason they were attracted to the stock market, they're now attracted to cryptocurrencies.
Okay.
Or more attracted, yeah.
Okay. It says something about my risk tolerance.
Mine too, don't worry.
Okay, so what's going on? Let's pivot for a second to another part of investing, which is robo-advisors. What's going on in the robo-advisor space? And first of all, what is a robo-advisor?
So a robo-advisor is an investment platform that collects basic information from investors, such as risk tolerance, and then automates the subsequent investment process. In the UK, we have Nutmeg. In the US, there's Betterment. There's those two examples. And what's going on really is something quite similar, is that on the back of quite strong user growth over the next few years, we're expecting this to really slow down. So ultimately, robo-advisors are also going to have to explore new ways to grow their revenues.
Okay. And how are they similar, different to digital brokerages?
They do share some similarities actually to digital brokerages in the sense that they've also democratized investing to a certain degree. And the way they've done that is by offering lower fees and also a digital first model, which means it's opened up access to people who previously didn't invest or felt that they couldn't. The difference between the two is digital brokerages by nature encourage short-term investing and speculative bets, whereas robos are more focused on longer term investment horizons and also automate the investment decision, whereas digital brokerages, they offer self-directed or DIY investing services, so do it yourself.
Got it. Okay. And how did robo-advisors fare during the pandemic?
Yes, it's interesting because pre-pandemic, most analysts actually expected a slowdown in their new user growth, yet they actually clocked strong user growth, so the opposite occurred. For example, Wealthfront and Betterment both reported double-digit increases in account openings over the 2020-21 period. And according to our own forecast, by 2020, there were roughly 2.8 million US robo-advisor account holders. So that signified a 37.8% jump from 2019.
Wow. And how are they getting on now?
In a similar way to digital brokerages, this elevated user growth is slowing. It dipped in 2021, and we expect it's going to tail off rapidly going forward.
Okay. Why? Why the slowdown? Why now?
So I think there's a few interconnected reasons at play. So in the first place, robo-advisors' core demographic is made up of largely younger and less wealthy investors who they were able to attract and scoop up due to reasons we discussed, the fact that their fees are lower and they have a digital business. And you could almost class these investors as their low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. They've started to saturate these markets. And ultimately, that means they get to keep sourcing new user growth. They're going to have to appeal to, for example, wealthier demographics. And that's something they've so far struggled to do. Mm-hmm. And that's more or less because what they offer and what, for example, a high net worth individual wants is not aligned. High net worth individuals want that high touch, personalized experience, mm-hmm. which robo-advisors typically don't offer. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, with adverse economic conditions and government fiscal support winding down this year, consumers, as they have less to trade, they also have less to invest.
Right, right. So what does all this mean for the robo space?
It's going to really ramp up competition among players in an already crowded market.
Yep.
Investors are spoiled for choice in terms of robo-advisors. They've got fintechs like Wealthfront, known as independents, and then incumbents that have their own offerings like Vanguard or Wells Fargo being two. Hmm. With the independents, what we're expecting is some of the less successful players that can continue going out of business, and the more successful ones might be acquired by larger financial institutions, which is something we've already seen. Earlier this month, Goldman Sachs announced it's taking over Next Capital in the UK. Nutmeg was taken over by JP Morgan in a big deal. Mm. And earlier this year, UBS agreed to take over Wealthfront. So we expect this trend is going to continue going forward.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's all we've got time for the lead. It's time now for the halftime report. Michael, we covered the entire future of investing. So a lot. But what do you think the listeners should really take away with them from the first half of the episode?
Yeah, so firstly, the retail investing boom of the past few years has slowed down as expected. So digital brokerages that clocked this record user growth like Robinhood are going to have to explore new growth strategies to keep growing, keep mm-hmm. growing their revenues.
Yep.
And secondly, new user growth among robo-advisors is also slowing. So the independents that remain on the market are going to have to adapt their offerings to keep growing. And we also expect at the same time, some of the more successful ones will be scooped up by financial services giants.
Yeah. Well, for more on the topic, check out two reports, our Spotlight US Digital Stock Trading Report and the Evolution of US Robo-Advisors Report, both that Michael recently wrote. That's all we've got time for the lead. Time now for In Other News, but first a quick word from our sponsor, Mparticle. At the end of the day, your customer has to be at the center of everything you do. This starts with the right customer data strategy, as well as the right foundation to solve the challenges that typically inhibit success, such as data quality, data governance, and connectivity. Mparticle is your real-time customer data infrastructure that helps you accelerate your data strategy by cleansing, visualizing, and integrating your customer data from anywhere to anywhere. Ultimately, better data leads to better decisions, better customer experiences, and better outcomes. See why the best brands choose Mparticle. Go to www.mparticle.com. Folks, we are back today in other news. US banks missed the mark with personalization, and Bank of America's increasing digital engagement within its global wealth and investment management business. Story one, US banks missed the mark with personalization. What are we talking about? Well, people are not happy with the level of personalization they're receiving from their banks per a JD Power 2022 US retail banking study, notes insider intelligence banking analyst Tom Octoloni. The report found that folks were dissatisfied with banks' approaches to personalization based on how well they're supported during difficult financial times. The survey suggests that nearly 8 out of 10 people would continue using their bank if they received personalized support, but closer to 4 in 10 banks are actually delivering it. Customers are expecting financial advice and problem resolution. But Michael, the biggest takeaway for banks from this research should be blank.
The banks need to personalize their customer experience. There's clearly, as this survey shows, a misalignment between retail banking customers' expectation of a personalised experience and what banks are actually delivering. Mm-hmm. So addressing this really needs to be a focus for banks, as it will help them to keep hold of their customer bases by improving their customer experience. In order to actually achieve this, they need to overhaul their data strategies in the first place. That's using the deep pools of customer data they have to better understand each customer and personalize each interaction, including financial advice. It can also inform marketing strategies, so they spotlight in-demand products and mobile banking features.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't until reading this where I thought to myself, yeah, my bank isn't personalizing anything for me. And I think there's a tremendous amount of inertia when it comes to banking. It's the one that you started with when you're a kid, oftentimes, and it's the one you still have, and you stick with it because you trust them, and you don't really ask a ton from your bank other than just please keep my money safe. So yeah, I think this is a good point. Story two. Bank of America's Q1 2022 earnings report shows a steadily increasing digital engagement within its global wealth and investment management business. In Q1 2022, a record 81% of Merrill households and a record 85% of private bank relationships were digitally active across the enterprise, both up year on year, writes Insider Intelligence Director of Financial Services Briefings, Sherry Fairchalk. Also, Bank of America's AI-driven virtual financial assistant had over 120 million interactions during the latest quarter. From these conversations, financial advisors gleaned 2.2 million insights to inform their client interactions and strategy, Sherry notes. But Michael, this tells us blank about the wealth management industry and increasing use of technology.
This tells us that the wealth management industry is going digital. And I think what really sparked that was when lockdowns hit, it took wealth managers by surprise as they're so reliant on in-person meetings. That's really a defining aspect of the wealth management space, and it exposed they're behind on their digital transformation journeys. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, wealth managers, as they have been doing, they need to keep investing in digital and on their tech spend to build out digital tools. This doesn't mean that wealth managers are going to phase out in-person meetings and look more like a robo-advisor, but rather they're going to increasingly adopt a hybrid model, which means they're going to blend both human interactions and digital self-service.
And that is all we have time for today's episode. Thank you so much, Michael, for hanging out today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you to Todd, who's helping us edit the show. We'll see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by mParticle.